Hello, I'm Dr. Christine Lane, Editor-in-Chief of Annals of Internal Medicine, and I'm here to give you a quick overview of the new articles that are waiting for you on annals.org. The first article I'll mention reports an audit of U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention public databases that found that nearly half of routinely updated federal health surveillance systems had interrupted updates in 2025. The researcher reviewed the CDC's public data catalog in October 2025, examining more than 1,300 listed databases and focusing on those that had previously been updated at least monthly. Using each database's stated update schedule, they classified whether updates were current or paused. Of the 82 databases that met inclusion criteria, 46% had halted updates, most for more than 6 months. The majority of paused databases tracked vaccination-related information, while others covered respiratory diseases and drug overdose deaths. As of early December 2025, almost none had resumed updating. The authors conclude that prolonged, unexplained pauses in federal health surveillance data risk weakening evidence-based decision-making. In an accompanying editorial, Dr. Jean Marazzo of the Infectious Disease Society of America discusses the role of CDC surveillance in the ability to coordinate effective, urgent responses to public health concerns. Dr. Marazzo notes that without reliable data, the U.S. is not only flying blind in the face of emerging and reemerging threats to human health and well-being, but is also deprived of effective weaponry. Next is a study of hospitalized adults with severely low sodium levels that found that correcting sodium more quickly was associated with a lower risk of death or delayed neurologic complications, challenging longstanding medical recommendations that favor slower correction. Researchers from Kaiser Permanente, Northern California, examined medical records from 13,988 adults hospitalized with severe hyponatremia between 2008 and 2023 across 21 community hospitals in the health system. Patients were grouped based on how quickly their sodium levels were corrected within the first 24 hours and were followed for up to 90 days. The primary outcome was death or serious delayed neurologic events such as brain damage, seizures, paralysis, or altered consciousness. Overall, 21% of patients experienced one of these outcomes. After adjusting for patient risk factors, those whose sodium levels were corrected at medium or fast rates had significantly lower risk of death or neurologic complications than those treated more slowly, particularly among higher-risk patients. The results suggest that current guidelines promoting slow correction of sodium levels may warrant reevaluation. Violent injury is a frequent and growing problem in the U.S., and strategies to reduce violence are urgently needed. Researchers from Boston University and colleagues aim to determine whether Boston Medical Center's hospital-based violence intervention program could prevent future violence among young adults. They analyzed hospital and police records for 1,328 patients aged 16 to 34 years who presented to the emergency department with a knife or firearm assault injury between 2013 and 2022, and compared outcomes for those who engaged with the program within 1 month of injury to those who did not. The results showed no significant difference unless participation in the program was sustained over at least 8 weeks. Among those who engaged consistently with the program, the researchers found sizable long-term reductions in community violence. The findings underscore the potential for these programs to significantly reduce community violence, but only if they can be implemented in such a way that effectively engages patients in an ongoing manner. Anemia affects up to 50% of pregnancies, but the relationship between early pregnancy maternal hemoglobin concentration and important perinatal outcomes has been largely unknown. The next article reports a population-based study in Ontario, Canada, that assessed early pregnancy hemoglobin levels and associated severe neonatal morbidity and mortality over 1 million births. The study revealed a U-shaped relationship between early pregnancy hemoglobin and severe neonatal mortality and morbidity. Both maternal anemia and relative erythrocytosis were each associated with poor outcomes in this high-income setting, suggesting a need for clinical trials to evaluate the effect of interventions to achieve normal hemoglobin levels on maternal and perinatal outcomes. Bereavement after the death of someone close is universal, and physicians are uncertain if or when interventions may be beneficial. Next is a systematic review of healthcare interventions for bereaved children and adults. Two reviewers selected randomized controlled trials comparing interventions for bereaved or soon-to-be-bereaved individuals to usual care, no intervention, or an alternative intervention. 169 randomized controlled trials evaluated psychotherapy, expert-facilitated support groups, pharmacotherapy, peer support, self-help interventions, writing, music, and art, enhanced provider contact, and integrative medicine for bereaved persons. Unfortunately, risk of bias was substantial among identified trials. Study samples were diverse, and only 15 trials included children. The authors conclude that evidence supports that psychotherapy can improve general grief and grieving, grief disorder, and depression symptoms in bereaved persons. Expert-facilitated support groups and enhanced provider contact may also provide some benefit, but evidence for other bereavement interventions and outcomes is very limited. Human papillomavirus vaccination alters the landscape of cervical cancer risk, requiring adaptations to cervical cancer screening programs. Next is a report of a cost-effectiveness analysis of screening strategies based on age of vaccination. Using published data, the researchers modeled hypothetical cohorts of women vaccinated at 7 different age groups in Norway. The preferred/cost-effectiveness screening for each age group was identified using a cost-effectiveness threshold of $55,000 per quality-adjusted life year. Harm-benefit trade-offs were quantified as the number of colposcopy referrals to cervical cancer cases averted. The results of this modeling exercise suggest that high-value screening programs likely involves less frequent screening for women who are vaccinated against human papillomavirus before age 30. A new commentary authored by FDA leaders describes the FDA perspective on CAR T cell therapy. To date, expanded follow-up from hematologic malignancies has shown CAR T cell therapies may be associated with late-onset toxicities such as Parkinson's disease, enterocolitis, motor and neurocognitive toxicity, and secondary malignancy several years after product exposure. With the rapidly growing field of CAR T cell clinical trials, expert-based consensus and recommendations for best practice have been developed to promote patient safety and harmonization of procedures. The authors say that while FDA shares enthusiasm for this class of products, the agency is learning from early phase experiences and will carefully shepherd the advancement of these early and late phase clinical studies focused on the development, durability, and long-term safety of CAR T-cell therapies. The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services has issued new childhood vaccine recommendations that align with the Danish vaccine schedule. A new commentary by a Danish pediatric infectious disease expert explains that the Danish vaccine schedule is purposely designed for a small country with a homogeneous population, high equity, extensive digitalization, and substantial public investment in childcare, education, housing, and universal healthcare. And all of these factors contribute to low baseline risk from infectious diseases. Fundamental societal differences between Denmark and the United States warrant fundamental differences in the respective vaccination recommendations. She then outlines the potential negative consequences of adopting the Danish recommendations in the United States. Another ideas and opinions commentary discusses the trade-offs presented by the adoption of artificial intelligence scribes. These scribes may increase efficiency, but at what expense? And for those of you who conduct or need to interpret clinical trials, a new Research and Reporting Methods article discusses the impact of study hypotheses on results in standard and non-inferiority randomized clinical trials. Finally, an IM Matters news article addresses the increasing interest among cardiologists in incorporating GLP-1 receptor agonists into the care of their cardiology patients. That brings us to the end of this podcast. Thanks for listening, and thanks to Beth Jenkinson, Andrew Langman, and Bernie Turner for their technical support.